I'm not going to preach the word today. I'm going to preach five of them. Just five. You know, they say every speech or sermon ought to have an introduction and then the body and the conclusion. Well, everything I say will be introduction to the five words. We sometimes study deeply and it's wonderful and it's uplifting and we have point A and point B and subpoint and all those complicated things and we go out feeling very uplifted and a couple of days later we can't remember all of it. But we can remember five words, I think. We've done things like this before here, and it's been proven that it can be remembered. I was talking with one of you just a couple of days ago, and you reminded me of five words from a year or two ago, and that's heartwarming. I think we can do the same today. A year or two ago, I related an experience here. And we don't always do repeats, but that one kind of tickled Julian's funny bone. That's my grandson, and he's applied to me numerous times since for a redux of that. And so for Julian, I will relate this again, and I think you'll see as we go along that it does fit in once more. Back long time ago when I was in the seminary, we sat at the feet of the learned there, and we took in all that we could of the great and majestic thoughts and the interpretations of Scripture and the wonderful truths of the gospel. There was one professor who was really my favorite. He came from far across the sea. He had a PhD in theology, and he had sat at the feet of the mighty in some of the great institutions of the world. And my, he was a deep thinker. Deep is right. And he came to class one morning and he was just full of the studying that he had done the night before. And he wanted to share it all with us in the most forceful way. And so he exhorted us, brothers and sisters, we must study deeper and deeper, down to the very fundament of the truth. Well, thereafter, when we seminarians would meet in the hall, we'd exchange a wink and say, deeper and deeper. And you know, that's good advice. Deeper and deeper. We need to study. But sometimes the deeper and deeper isn't so good in our lives. What do you do when you don't know what to do? Have you ever felt that way? You sock your fist. I just don't know what to do. This is all introduction now. The five words are coming. Way down in the Texas Hill Country, a little girl named Frances was born, and she turned out to be the oldest of 10 siblings, and she was a remarkable little kid. By the time she was 10, she was driving a tractor around her dad's farm and working with him in the fields and helping to take care of her younger brothers and sisters. She grew up in that very same way, just surprising abilities, surprising courage, and just a spirit of can-do. And when she got all grown up, she took a job as one of Texas' first deputy sheriffs. She strapped on a .357 Magnum, and she patrolled the back roads of the Texas Hill Country, keeping the peace and meeting the needs of the populace. And she made such a name for herself in that position that she decided to run for county sheriff. Well, people had never thought of a lady sheriff, and they needed a good sheriff, and so lo and behold, they elected her. And she was one of the first woman sheriffs in that whole Lone Star State. And she won the respect of the population. Everybody knew there was a new sheriff in town. And Sheriff Francis Kaiser did a mighty fine job of keeping the peace. She was 6 feet tall in her cowboy boots, and she wore Sheriff's Star earrings and packed her big gun on her hip. And everybody knew you didn't take no lip, as the song says, from Sheriff Francis. Well, one day somebody came running in and said, "Sheriff, there's a guy downtown and he's holed up in a building and he's got a gun to his head. And he says he's going to kill himself and anybody else who comes in to try to stop him." Well, Sheriff Francis walked down the main street to the building. She turned in, opened the door, walked in. And there he was. And the gun came down from his head and went into full combat stance, aimed right at her. She had 3 kids and a husband at home by now. It was a mighty risk for her, but she slowly walked forward. True story. She came up close to him. The gun trembled in his hand as he sighted through the notch and up to the blade and to that target he had chosen between her eyes. There she stood in her 10-gallon hat with the gun at her side, still in the holster. And she said, "And what do you say at such a time? Do you reprove? You shouldn't be doing this. Do you reason? Now look at all you're going to lose. Do you scold? You say, 'I'm going to arrest you.'" No, the guy had nothing to lose. And once again, the gun trembled as he prepared to pull the trigger. And as he looked between those eyes, he saw them narrow into almost a smile and a look of love, and she said, "Darling, I think you need a hug." He turned the gun around and he pointed it at himself. And he pulled his left hand up and grasped the barrel and handed it to her and fell into her welcoming arms, sobbing. Safe in the arms of Jesus, safe on his gentle breast, there by his love o'ershaded, sweetly only my soul will rest. Darling, do you ever need a hug? Sometimes there are things deeper and deeper down in our spirits and in our souls that reason cannot reach. When courage runs out and imagination gives up, we need a hug. And there are great arms stretched out. Those arms that were stretched out on the cross, the Lord stretches out to all of us when we need a hug. And so the old song says, keep looking up. Thy God is still the same today. Keep looking up. He will not fail thee, come what may. Keep looking up, the darkest night will turn to day, so do not doubt, but keep on looking up. Yes, keep looking up, but what if you can't? Does the time ever come when you just can't look up? You've gone deeper and deeper into despair. God's got an answer for that. This is all introduction. Old Moses got some bad news one day. He'd fearlessly led the children of Israel through 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, and now they had come to the Jordan River, but he'd had some failures along the way, and so the Lord said, now Moses, in my great plan, you're not going to be able to cross over that river. I know you've looked forward to it, but I've got different plans, and so you're going to die, Moses. Your life is going to come to an end, and Joshua is going to take the folks on across into the promised land. Good old faithful Moses, he took the news, and he thought about it. There on the banks of the Jordan, he called the folks together and he gave them a final blessing, a farewell message. Gathered there at the river, as we sang about gathering at the river of life up there in the wonderful kingdom, but there Israel was gathered at the river where they were about to go across, and they were going to have battles to fight on the other side, and it was really a time of anticipation, and here Moses was going to miss out. But his final words to Israel were very, very significant. He said, there's no one like the God of Jeshurun. This just thrills me to think of this imagery. He said, there's no one like God who rides across the heavens to help you and on the clouds in his majesty. You know, the old Western movies, the thugs are just about to hang the villain, and they've got the rope around his neck, and the music plays in the background, and everything is tense, and then you hear a bugle call over the hill, and here comes the cavalry riding in, and they save the hero just in time. It says, God rides across the heavens to help you and on the clouds in his majesty. Oh, I like that. He comes riding in like the cavalry and he saves us when we need him. And Moses told the folks this when Moses was facing the end and the greatest disappointment of his life. And I couldn't help sharing that because it impressed me so much, even though it's not exactly the passage that I had in mind. For the one that I really wanted was the next one. Got to turn this on and got to push the button. He says, the eternal God is your refuge. The eternal God is your refuge. He comes riding across the heavens on the clouds. He's your refuge, he told folks. Even though he was facing the end of his own experience, he was 120 years old, the Bible says, and his strength hadn't failed and his eyesight was perfect. He was a strapping fellow still, but he wasn't going to be able to go over. And he could still say, the eternal God is your refuge. What faith. And the eternal God is our refuge today. No matter what's wrong, no matter what the troubles, no matter the disappointments, the sorrows, the regrets, the guilt, the sin, whatever it is, he's a refuge. We can go to him. A refuge is a place of peace. It's a place of protection, a haven of safety where nothing can get us when we're in the refuge. But what if you're too weak to flee to the refuge? What if your faith has failed and you're so confused by doubt and trouble and disappointment that not only can you not keep looking up, you can't flee to the refuge? What you gonna do when you don't know what to do? What if you're too discouraged and too despondent and you've sunk deeper and deeper, way down there, almost beyond reach? Everything looks like it's gone wrong. The old hobo lived in a shack down by the railroad tracks, and one day some naughty boys sneaked in there when he was sound asleep. They thought it would be funny, and they rubbed Limburger cheese all in his mustache. Now, you know what that smells like. They gave him a big dose of Limburger cheese right there in his mustache, and then they went sneaking out, giggling quietly. Well, after a while, the old boy woke up. And he looked around. What is this? And he got up and he sniffed all around the shack. It's terrible. And he went and stuck his head out and he looked up and down the tracks. And he said, the whole world stinks. Have you ever felt that way? Sometimes it just looks like there ain't no hope. The whole world has gone wrong. You can't keep looking up. And you can't flee to the refuge. You know, All of the offers are there, but you're down too far, way too far. Now we're squatting for the jump, 'cause here they are. One, two, three, four, five. Count them, recite them over and over. Remember them. The eternal God is your refuge. That's wonderful. He rides on the clouds across the sky. Oh, how glorious. But when all that doesn't work, and when you're wondering what to do, when you don't know what to do, underneath are the everlasting arms. Underneath are the everlasting arms. Everything before that was introduction. Everything after this is postscript. There's the message. Underneath it all are the everlasting arms. These five words won't get you out of every jam, but they will get you through every jam. Because those everlasting arms are deeper and deeper than any trouble, than any discouragement, than any heartache, than any guilt, than any despair of which the human heart is capable. If you can't keep looking up, if you can't flee to the refuge, then look down, because underneath it all are, not will be, but are, because they're the arms of the what kind of God? The eternal God. Those arms are down there eternally. They were down there before we ever needed them, and they'll be down there forever. No matter how low we go, underneath where we go are the everlasting arms. When I was just a little kid, just running around, my mom and dad and some friends, our family went up the road to a nearby swimming pool, and it was a hot summer evening, and everybody was in there swimming and splashing, and I couldn't swim yet. I'd never learned. So I'm over here playing on the lawn, and they were on just having a good time, and on a sudden inspiration of a little toddler, I went running across the lawn, and I leaped into the air yelling. I've heard this story so many times, repeated at home amidst great laughter. I went running across and I leaped into the air yelling, "Fim, Daddy, Fim!" And I went down with a great splash, and it was 9 feet deep. And suddenly my joy and my exuberance turned to alarm and panic, and I splashed and I coughed and I choked. And then down there underneath me, I felt something hard, something strong. And I came up and I felt the iron bands of my dad's arms. He was a working man, and his arms were strong as steel. And he raised me up, and he was laughing. Underneath are the everlasting arms. He'll pick you up. He'll raise you up from any depth. And when you're wondering what to do, when you don't know what to do, and darling, when you need a hug, just emotionally and mentally relax and fall back into those welcoming arms that are waiting for you there. And hear him say, as Dad said to me long ago, I've got you. I've got you. He's got the whole world in his hands. You know that song, and it's true. Just lie back into those arms when you don't know what else to do. This is not permission to quit trying, but rather an invitation to keep on doing your best in confidence and faith, moving on into the unknown step by step, knowing that you're in his arms, safe for eternity, even though the waters may be deep. Underneath are the everlasting arms. Well, can you prove that? Of course not. That's why they call us believers. The skeptic says, well, seeing is believing, but with the things of God, often believing is seeing. He asks us to believe. He said to Thomas, you know, Thomas said, show me those nail prints in your hands, and then I'll believe. And the Lord said, okay, Thomas, there they are. They're ugly, aren't they? Old ugly scars. But blessed are those who, having not seen, have believed. There are some things that come true only when you believe. And such it is with those everlasting arms. Underneath are the everlasting arms. Believe that they're down there underneath, and lie back and rest your soul and your spirit in those everlasting arms, and you'll see. You'll see. There is a place of quiet rest near to the heart of God, a place where sin cannot molest, near to the heart of God. Oh, Jesus, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of God, hold us who wait before thee. near to the heart of God. Underneath are the everlasting arms.